provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenes, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about account-based marketing in CW 18 and 19. Frenes is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with research-grade account profiling and insights. You can find more info in the description.
Which, honestly, is the perfect context for what we're getting into today.
Absolutely, because right now there are just thousands of B2B marketing teams staring at their analytics dashboards, completely scratching their heads.
Yeah, they're wondering why their super expensive account-based marketing campaigns are generating, you know, zero pipeline.
Exactly. Zero. And we dug through the most relevant LinkedIn discourse over these last 2 weeks, calendar weeks 18 and 19. And the overarching consensus reveals a pretty harsh truth for you guys listening.
A really harsh truth.
Yeah. Most teams aren't doing ABM at all. I mean, they are just doing regular broad demand generation, but they've just sort of slapped a fancy target account list onto it and called it a day.
Right. Right. And the reckoning happening in the B2B space right now because of this is massive.
Mm.
I mean, we're looking at a complete structural breakdown of what marketing teams thought was working.
Yeah. It's falling apart.
It really is. You have the quiet collapse of these incredibly expensive software platforms, a fundamental shift in how teams align with sales, and this frankly mind-bending realization about AI.
Oh, the AI stuff is wild.
Right. It's no longer just a tool we use to write cold emails. It is actually acting as a literal member of the B2B buying committee.
Which is just crazy to think about. But okay, before you can market to an account or, you know, an AI gatekeeper, you have to actually choose the account.
Right. You need a target.
Yeah. And this is where the friction really starts. How are teams actually picking their targets? Because from what Mikhail Tarin shared in his post, it sounds like a lot of what gets called strategic ABM is just organized chaos.
Oh, organized chaos is putting it politely, I think. Mm-hmm. Tarin pointed out that a staggering number of these target lists are built purely on a founder's gut feeling. Or, you know, it's a random spreadsheet an intern built 3 years ago that just keeps getting recycled over and over.
Just completely unchecked.
Exactly. It's targeting based entirely on vibes. Mm. A sales leader says, hey, we need to close logos in the fintech space because I read an article about it. And suddenly that becomes the entire go-to-market strategy.
Right. And when you build an elaborate, super expensive motion on a random list, the downstream result is just inevitable pipeline failure.
You're building a mansion on quicksand.
Basically, yeah. But let me push back on that a little bit because we're talking about highly paid, intelligent professionals here. Are they really just being lazy?
That's a fair question.
Or is this an aspiration problem? Because Victoria Kirilova touched on this, and she had this great analogy. She compared bad ideal customer profile building, bad ICP building, to a teenager wanting to date a celebrity.
Oh, I loved that post.
It's so accurate. Companies say, well, we want to sell to enterprise because it's cool and prestigious. But as she pointed out, aspiration doesn't build a repeatable business.
No, it doesn't. Portfolio data builds a repeatable business. And Kirilova provided a beautifully grounded, like, mathematical formula for finding your actual ICP rather than your aspirational one.
Which is so desperately needed. What was the formula again?
It's high revenue share plus high win rate plus low churn. That equals your true target for ABM.
Okay, let's break the actual mechanics of that down for the listener.
Sure. So look at your historical data. If you are winning, say, one out of every two deals in the construction software space, and they stay with you for 5 years.
Okay, that's a great signal.
Right. But then you're only winning one out of 10 deals in the tourism space, and they churn after just 8 months.
Wow, yeah.
Your market is literally screaming at you where the path of least resistance is.
But teams ignore the math. Because the construction deals might be a little smaller, right? And the tourism deals sound sexier in a board meeting.
Precisely. And Matthias Sekta built on this exact problem. He warned that most B2B teams don't even know the actual physical size of their viable market.
That is genuinely terrifying.
It is. If you sit a marketing leadership team down and ask, how many actual companies exist on planet Earth that fit this specific high win rate profile? You usually just get dead silence. They don't know if the number is 800 or 8,000.
So they are flying totally blind. I mean, they might be allocating $1 million ad budget to reach an audience of like 400 people.
Which happens all the time, unfortunately. Sekta argues you need a real calculated database, not some vague Gartner or Forrester report claiming you operate in an $80 billion market.
Like those massive vanity numbers.
Yeah, you need a bottom-up calculation of your total addressable market, your serviceable addressable market, and your serviceable attainable market.
Okay, so meaning TAM is the big pie in the sky. Sam is who actually buys your specific flavor of the product.
Exactly.
And Barasam is who you can literally reach and service with your current sales team and budget.
Yes. You need to know that you are going after exactly, say, 1,200 accounts. Every downstream decision, your headcount, your event budget, your channel mix at all, must be reverse engineered from that specific number.
You know, even 1,200 might be too generous for a real ABM motion. Adam Tarina shared a strategy from a sales leader named Tony Mancuso, and it takes this restriction to the absolute extreme. Honestly, it terrified me a little.
The cutting down of the list.
Yes. Mancuso's approach for resource-constrained teams is to start with tens of thousands of accounts in your broader universe.
Okay.
Then you run them through a rigorous scoring model based on specific value props and recent trigger events, like a new round of funding or a leadership change.
Well, if you're smart.
Yeah. And that narrows it down to about 100 highly qualified accounts. And then you have to make the hardest call in business.
You cut 80 of them.
You cut 80, you focus your entire operation on just 20 accounts.
The discipline required to do that is just immense.
Wait, practically speaking, if I'm a VP of marketing and I march into my CEO's office and say, hey, good news, we are intentionally ignoring 99% of our addressable market, I am getting fired before lunch.
Oh, absolutely.
So how do you actually sell that internal discipline to leadership?
Well, you don't pitch it as ignoring the market. You pitch it as reallocating tier one resources to the 20 accounts that are mathematically proven to close the fastest. You frame it around pipeline velocity.
Okay. That's a crucial distinction.
It is. Samantha S. and Amprakash Kurupanen brought this up in their post. They argue that ABM is not a marketing tactic. It's not a secondary channel you just sit next to your inbound blog strategy.
Yeah, right.
It is a complete go-to-market redesign. Amprakash put it perfectly. He basically said, if your primary success metrics haven't shifted away from marketing qualified leads.
Ah, the classic MQLs.
Right, those classic MQLs. If you haven't shifted away from those and towards actual deal movement, you aren't doing ABM.
Because MQLs are a volume metric. I mean, you can generate 500 MQLs by giving away a free iPad and a webinar, but if none of them are from those 20 target accounts, you've achieved literally nothing.
Nothing at all. And Ricardo Montes Baobide noted something critical along these lines. He wrote that pipeline is generated by alignment, not activity.
Oh, I love that phrasing.
Isn't it great? In a traditional setup, marketing generates the leads, throws them over the fence to sales, and just washes their hands of it.
And then if it fails, marketing blames sales for not closing, and sales blames marketing for weak leads. It's a tale as old as time.
Exactly. But in an account-based model, that silo has to be completely destroyed. Marketing and sales must share the exact same pipeline goals and work off the exact same target list.
Again, that sounds phenomenal in a textbook, right?
Mm.
But actually implementing that is incredibly messy. You can't just pause the entire company for 6 months to restructure the go-to-market motion.
No, the business has to keep running.
Right. So I really appreciated the insight from Andrei Zinkevich on how to actually start this without burning your existing marketing calendar to the ground.
Oh, yeah. His approach is so practical.
It really is. He suggests taking something you are already doing, like a planned broad webinar, and just narrowing the focus. Instead of top 10 trends in HR tech, you make it a highly specific use case tailored for a small cluster of your target accounts.
And the crucial mechanism there is sitting down with sales beforehand, right?
Exactly. You define the success criteria with sales before the event even happens.
That upfront alignment is everything. Mm-hmm. You have to agree. How many people from our specific target accounts need to actually show up to call this event a win? Are we aiming for 5 specific CFOs?
And when you are dealing with truly massive deals, the execution of those events has to be totally flawless. Magrizada Galieska described the environment of high-value B2B, where pipeline is like north of $100 million. And she introduced one of the best analogies I've seen in a long time.
The waiter analogy.
Yes. She said the marketer needs to act like a waiter.
It's a brilliant way to frame it, honestly. You are serving invisible value through relationships and tailored micro-events. Galieska firmly declares these high-value spaces a no-sales and marketing zone.
Let's pull that waiter analogy apart for a second because I think it explains the mechanism so well. A truly excellent waiter at a Michelin star restaurant doesn't run up to your table, interrupt your conversation, and aggressively pitch you the steak.
No, they read the table.
Yes, they read the room. They know if it's a tense business negotiation or a romantic anniversary. They anticipate needs. They silently refill the water glass without you ever really noticing they were there.
And in B2B marketing, That translates to understanding their specific business problems before they ever have to articulate them to you.
Exactly. You aren't handing a Fortune 500 CEO a branded Yeti mug or a cheap stress ball. You are providing genuine, friction-free insight. The best marketing at this tier doesn't actually feel like marketing to the buyer.
But, you know, delivering that level of invisible, bespoke service requires an incredibly granular understanding of your audience. You can't be a great waiter if you just blindly drop a tray of food in the corporate lobby.
Good point.
You need to know exactly who is sitting at the table.
Which naturally pivots us right into the shift toward contact-level execution. Steve Armenti and Dmitry Lisitsky highlighted that the strategy has definitively moved from account-level orchestration down to contact-level orchestration.
Yeah, we now have the tech and the capability to treat every individual person inside an account as a market of one.
Which is funny because the term account-based marketing is almost a misnomer at this point.
I was just thinking that.
Right. I mean, isn't the whole premise of ABM that we stopped focusing on individual leads and started looking at the company as a whole? Why are we suddenly obsessing over individual personas again?
Well, because, as Ali Lippman and Orla Murphy pointed out in their posts, the buying committees inside these accounts are larger and more fractured than they have ever been.
That makes sense.
You aren't selling to the account. The account doesn't sign the contract. A highly stressed group of human beings does. And those humans have entirely different, often competing, motivations.
Right. Like, the CFO's primary objective is risk mitigation and cutting costs. But the CTO's primary objective is acquiring the most cutting-edge technology so they can retain their top developers.
Exactly. So sending a generic account-level message about driving synergy to both of them is totally meaningless. To win the deal, you have to find a highly specific wedge for each stakeholder.
It's all about the individual context.
Yeah. You need to know that the CTO made a public promise on a podcast 6 months ago about migrating to the cloud, and they are behind schedule. Or you need to know what specific regulatory headache is sitting on the CFO's desk this quarter.
Ryan Carlin shared a story that is just the absolute masterclass in this contact-level approach. His team closed a $750,000 deal with Tesla, and the mechanics of how they did it are fascinating.
Oh, this is a great post.
Right. They didn't spray ads at 500 automotive accounts. They targeted exactly 15.
That intense focus again.
Yep. Then they ran incredibly deep enrichment on the individual decision makers. They looked at their social presence, the things they were commenting on, and crucially, their tenure in the role.
Tenure is such an underutilized signal. I mean, a VP who's been in the seat for 4 years is usually just protecting the status quo. But a VP who has been there for 4 months, they are desperately looking for a quick, high-visibility win to prove to the board they were a good hire.
Absolutely. So they took all those signals, the tenure, the public comments, the risk profiles, and they fed them into Claude.
But they didn't just ask the AI to write a cold email.
No, no. They used Claude to build deep psychological personality profiles for each committee member. They mapped out exactly what would motivate them. Then they orchestrated a five-touch sequence.
Okay, so what did that look like?
Well, they warmed them up with personalized ads, and then instead of asking for the classic 15-minute Zoom call, they invited the buying committee to a private food truck experience.
Wow. It goes back to the waiter analogy. No branded swag, just a tailored, localized event.
And they gamified it to lower the defensive shields. The sequence essentially said, hey, the chefs want to name it Secret Burger just for your team. If you can come up with the winning name, they'll give you $500.
It's so clever.
It was playful. It built instant rapport. By the time the SDR reached out, the food truck had done all the heavy lifting of establishing the relationship.
You know, the structural dynamic of that play is actually the most important part. Carlin noted that the sales development rep, the SDR, doing the outreach, reported directly to marketing, not to sales.
Now, why is that structural shift so critical? Because that's pretty unusual.
It changes the entire incentive model. When an SDR reports to a traditional sales manager, their only metric is meetings booked.
Right.
They will aggressively burn bridges just to hit their weekly quota.
Oh, totally. We've all gotten those terrible emails.
Right. But when the SDR reports to marketing in an ABM motion, the goal becomes build the right relationship at the exact right time. The SDR's outreach is mapped perfectly against the ad campaigns and the event invitations. The SDR becomes the concierge of the marketing experience, not just a telemarketer.
That's a huge distinction. But coordinating that level of bespoke outreach, managing Claude comps, tracking tenure changes, synchronizing SDR cadences with food truck RSVPs, I mean, that requires some heavy-duty technology.
Oh, absolutely.
But looking at the discourse from weeks 18 and 19, there is a massive reckoning happening with the tech stack right now. The legacy tools that teams have relied on seem to be just collapsing.
Camille Rexton and Chris A. brought forward some bombshell data regarding this.
Mm.
We are seeing major enterprise companies quietly but rapidly churning away from massive $120,000 a year black box ABM platforms like SixthSense and Demandbase.
But those platforms were the unquestioned gold standard for the last 5 years. Why the sudden exodus?
It really comes down to a complete breakdown in trust, mostly driven by broken ROI attribution. Chris A. detailed this classic nightmare scenario in his post.
Hopefully got me.
So a company drops $85,000 on the license. They spend the first 8 weeks just trying to get the tool to sync cleanly with Salesforce. Finally, it's running, and the platform's proprietary AI starts flagging accounts as high intent.
Okay, sounds good so far.
Right, so it spits out a list of 200 companies that are supposedly actively researching your solution based on third-party data.
So the sales team naturally jumps on the phones.
Right, the sales reps call them, and the reality is completely disconnected from the dashboard. Half the accounts aren't buying anything. Someone just accidentally downloaded a white paper.
Yeah.
And the other half, they already signed a contract with your competitor a week ago because the intent signal from the platform was delayed.
Oh, that's brutal. And because it's a black box algorithm, you can't even see the underlying data to figure out why the signal was so wrong.
Exactly. So the reps lose faith in the tool immediately. And when the CFO comes knocking at the end of the year, asking to see the definitive closed one pipeline generated by that $85,000 investment, marketing just can't prove it.
They just have fuzzy metrics.
Yeah, the platforms just claim the revenue was influenced by them. And in a tight economy, CFOs do not pay for vague influence. Those tools get cut.
But the takeaway here isn't that AI is useless in account-based marketing. It's that the application of the AI is shifting from broad, opaque intent data to highly specific execution. Like we just talked about how Ryan Carlin used Claude for persona building.
Yeah, but even that has immense risk if it's applied poorly. Jen Ellen Knuth had a fantastic warning about the lazy use of generative AI in outreach.
What did she say?
She argued that buyers have developed an instant radar for AI-generated cold emails.
Oh, she compared it to the fake handwritten envelope, didn't she? Which is so universally relatable.
Yes. You get an envelope in your mailbox. It looks like it was written with a blue ballpoint pen. You open it up feeling, you know, a little spark of curiosity, and it's just a pre-approved credit card offer from your bank.
You instantly feel manipulated and duped.
And that is exactly the psychological reaction a buyer has when we use an LLM to just scrape their LinkedIn and write a personalized email that lacks any actual strategic insight.
We just look lazy.
Right. We look lazy, and we train our prospects that our communications are inherently deceptive, so they just learn to permanently ignore us.
So if the expensive old guard intent platforms are losing trust and lazy ChatGPT emails are actively damaging our brand equity, where is the technology actually going?
This is the crazy part.
Yeah, this brings us to what I found to be the most provocative, mind-bending trend from the sources. According to Scott William Forrest, Lee Auden, and James Took, who was actually referencing a brilliant concept from Marissa Decay, the buying committee has evolved yet again.
Machines have joined the committee.
It's wild.
It really is. We are witnessing the very early stages of a shift from account-based marketing to agent-based marketing.
Explain the mechanism of that for the listener, because it fundamentally changes the job of a B2B marketer.
Think about how research happens today. Before a human buyer ever hits your landing page or downloads your beautifully designed slide deck or speaks to your SDR, they are deploying an AI agent.
Right.
They're opening Microsoft Copilot or ChatGPT Enterprise or Perplexity, and they are typing something like, compare the top three supply chain logistics platforms for a mid-sized manufacturing firm, focusing on implementation speed.
So the AI is doing the first pass of the vendor research. It is acting as the ultimate unbribable gatekeeper.
Yes, the AI parses the entire internet, decides what evidence is credible, generates the shortlist, and dictates the narrative of your brand to the human buyer.
So what does this actually mean for you, the listener, right now? How do you adapt to an AI gatekeeper? Well, it means that if your brand architecture isn't optimized for how large language models ingest and synthesize information, you are in serious trouble.
Big trouble.
Right. If your entire value proposition is buried inside a gated PDF that an AI scraper cannot access, or it's hidden behind a flashy video with no text transcript, Perplexity literally cannot read you.
You don't exist to them.
Exactly. You aren't just losing market share to a competitor. You are completely invisible to the algorithm making the shortlist.
It requires a profound operational shift. You have to ensure your technical documentation is flawless, your FAQs are structured cleanly in semantic HTML, and your brand is cited by authoritative third-party sources that the LLMs actually trust.
You're marketing to the machine.
You really are. You have to start testing your go-to-market messaging against AI agents. They are your tools, they are your teammates, and now they are your target audience.
Okay, let's pull all these threads together into a cohesive picture for the listener. B2B marketing is clearly undergoing a brutal but very necessary correction.
Yeah.
We are finally shedding the spray and pray demand generation that was just masquerading as ABM. To win in this environment, you have to do the unforgiving math on your ICP and build the internal political capital to ignore 99% of your addressable market.
Yep.
You have to shatter the silos and operate as a unified go-to-market engine where marketing and sales share identical pipeline goals and target lists.
That alignment is key.
And you have to read the table like a Michelin star waiter, engaging specific members of the buying committee with undeniable researched human relevance. And finally, you have to restructure your entire digital footprint for an era where AI agents are acting as the gatekeepers to your multi-million dollar accounts. If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, field marketing, channel and partner marketing, AI and B2B, MarTech, go-to-market, and social selling.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. Don't forget to subscribe to the feed. And as we sign off today, I want to leave you with one final, slightly unsettling thought to mull over.
Oh, boy.
Well, if AI agents are increasingly doing the initial vendor research and shortlisting for the buying committee, and on the flip side, marketing and sales teams are increasingly using AI agents to generate their outbound contact and execute their campaigns, how long until B2B marketing is quite literally just our AI trying to persuade their AI while the humans just sit back and wait for the final receipt?